Why did Moscow choose this particular time to hold so-called referenda in occupied territories on joining Russia?
First and foremost, I think there is, even within the Putin circle, growing recognition that this is going very badly.
Plus, the United States announces a new tranche of aid for Ukraine.
I think the most important thing for the Ukrainians, I feel, is they're going to be providing 18 more of these high-mobility artillery rocket systems, HIMARS.
And later in the program, protests continue in Russia against President Vladimir Putin's mobilization. Today is Thursday, September 29th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Miller. Russian President Vladimir Putin will on Friday begin formally annexing 15% of Ukrainian territory, presiding at a Kremlin signing ceremony to add four Ukrainian regions to Russia. Ukraine has called for an emergency meeting of its Security Council on Friday regarding the issue. From the Associated Press, Karen Chamas is up first.
Results of the vote in four regions in south and eastern Ukraine were announced by administrations put into place by Russia. They claimed 93% of ballots cast supported annexation in the Zaporizhia region, as did 87% in the Kherson region, 98% in the Luhansk region, and 99% in Donetsk. Many are questioning the suspiciously high margins in favor of annexation, with Ukraine and the West denouncing the vote as illegal and rigged. I'm Karen Chamas.
And speaking at the United Nations on Thursday, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres also condemned Russia's moves.
In this moment of peril, I must underscore my duty as Secretary General to uphold the Charter of the United Nations. The UN Charter is clear. Any annexation of a state territory by another state resulting from the threat or use of force is a violation of the principles of the UN Charter and international law.
President Volodymyr Zelensky issued a new warning to Russia of a very harsh response by Ukraine if Moscow does annex the four Ukrainian regions. Speaking to VOA's Ukrainian service via Skype, David Kramer, former president of Freedom House and managing director for global policy at the George W. Bush Institute, shares his thoughts on the urgency of Russia's referendums in the occupied territories.
I think it's connected to a few things. First and foremost, I think there is, even within the Putin circle, growing recognition that this is going very badly, that this is actually a disaster for Putin, for Russia's military, for Russia writ large. I think the success of the Ukrainian offensives has certainly had an impact on this. I would say that the Samarkand meeting, where Putin did not get a warm welcome. In fact, that montage of Putin waiting for four different leaders sitting in his chair. Usually it's the other way around. He keeps people waiting, but not in those cases. The Indian and Chinese reaction to events, I think, probably didn't sit well. And I think he is under growing pressure inside his own circle, including from hardliners, including from people who perhaps are advising him that this is not going well. It's time to cut the losses. The referenda, I don't think, will make any difference on the ground. Keep in mind that if Putin is thinking that Russia will annex these territories after the referendum and therefore Ukraine will be afraid to launch any military strikes against it, Ukraine's already launched strikes against Crimea, and Russia illegally annexed Crimea in 2014. The Ukrainians will continue their campaign no matter what happens. No one should recognize the results of these ridiculous phony referenda. It's being done under tremendous duress. So I think this all smells of desperation on the part of Putin, and it doesn't look good at all.
On Wednesday, U.S. Senators Lindsey Graham and Richard Blumenthal announced their efforts to condemn any action by Russia to annex any part of Ukraine. The pair said via statement that they plan to introduce legislation that requires the president to immediately cut off all economic and military assistance to nations that recognize Russia's illegal annexation of Ukrainian territory. The European Union has also indicated that it wants more sanctions on Russia. The AP's Charles de Ledesma continues our coverage.
Officials say the 27-nation bloc should impose biting sanctions on Russian trade and hit officials responsible for sham referendums held in parts of Ukraine. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen says the Kremlin-orchestrated referendums on joining Russia are an illegal attempt to grab land and change international borders by force. The EU's executive branch has drawn up several rafts of sanctions against Russia since President Vladimir Putin launched an invasion of neighboring Ukraine 7 months ago. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
The Youth League of South Africa's ruling ANC party has endorsed Russia's referendums in occupied parts of Ukraine, which are designed to pave the way for Moscow to annex the territories. The endorsement came after members of the group accepted invitations from Moscow to act as international observers of the Kremlin-orchestrated votes. The Ukrainian Association of South Africa says it is disappointed in the Youth League's stance, while the ANC itself is remaining silent on the issue. Vicky Stark has more.
Youth League Subcommittee on International Relations, Kolekane Skosana, has commended Russian President Vladimir Putin on Twitter. Skosana posted a clip of his interview with the South African Broadcasting Corporation.
We stand in solidarity with all the oppressed people of the world. It's not just in Donbass. We stand with people of Palestine, Western Sahara. We will always stand with those who are oppressed and those who don't have anyone to defend them. The revolution will not be televised. That's why we went to see for ourselves as young people of the liberation movement of President Nelson Mandela.
The president of the Ukrainian Association of South Africa, Zvinka Kachur, says the Youth League members are simply being used by Russia to try to legitimize a process that falls far short of international laws on referendums. Moscow has released vote tallies showing support in all four regions where the referendum was held for 5 days, beginning September 23. But Svinka says this is a lie because Russia doesn't control all of these areas.
Yes, they may be controlling almost completely the territory of one region, of Luhansk. But they don't control Donetsk, they don't control Zaporizhia, and they definitely don't control Kherson region.
She said they've heard the international media reports of Russian soldiers going door to door to get people to vote at gunpoint.
A lot of our community members have their relatives that are still at the occupied territories. We understand people being tortured and how people are hiding.
Zvinka added that the Ukrainian Association is disappointed in the ANC government for not reacting to the Youth League statements. The government has repeatedly said it is neutral in this conflict, but the Ukrainian Association says Kosana's comments are anything but.
As the ANC Youth League is connected to the ANC government, if the government is supporting that silently, I think it's a big challenge for South African democracy and for all South Africans living in this country, because it says that the ruling party does not understand what democracy is.
Requests for comment from the ANC's main body went unanswered. The party's spokesperson, Pule Mabe, simply sent two text messages saying, "May I please revert back?" Political analyst Ralph Mateka says he is perplexed.
It is very strange that the ANC Youth League could actually send observers to Russia on a very controversial referendum, actually, a referendum that has been referred to as a sham referendum by the global community. So for the ANC Youth League to be sending members there, it is very strange. I don't know what exactly does the Youth League aim to achieve. I don't know whether this will give them traction in South Africa's politics.
Mateka says he wonders who paid for the trip and whether the decision to go was taken within the ANC and where the decision was taken. Reuters reports that the United States is preparing a new round of sanctions to punish Russia for the annexation move, and a $1.1 billion arms package for Ukraine that will be announced soon. Vicky Stark for VOA News, Cape Town, South Africa.
The U.S. Pentagon announced on Wednesday that it's providing an additional $1.1 billion in aid to Ukraine. Joining us is VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb with the details. Carla, what exactly is included with this $1.1 billion allocation that was just announced on Wednesday?
So there are a lot of new weapons and equipment in this package. The biggest thing, the most important thing for the Ukrainians, I feel, is they're going to be providing 18 more of these high mobility artillery rocket systems, HIMARS. You've probably heard a lot about those on the battlefield. The U.S. has already given Ukraine 16 of those, and they are what officials have said have been key to not only their defense of their country, but their offense as well, and pushing the Russians out of the country. These 18, keep in mind, are not going to be going onto the battlefield immediately. This group of funding is being used for future needs. So these won't be ready for years, senior defense officials and senior military officials tell reporters. But they're putting in the procurement process for them now so they can be bought, built, and ready for Ukraine when they need them. Also in this package, there's going to be a lot of things used to counter drones. There's going to be more than 20 different radar systems, these Titan products that are used to counter drones. And Russia has really been targeting Ukrainian troops with drones. They've purchased Iranian-made drones, and they've been using them in the battlefield. And so this is the U.S. Providing Ukraine with a means to counter that. In addition to that, it's going to be a lot of tactical things that they just need from day to day. 150 Humvees are in this package, 150 tactical vehicles, dozens of trucks and trailers, 40 trucks, 80 trailers, body armor, communications equipment, all of the things that they're going to need in the coming months for the fight. And I've been told by a senior defense official that this will be getting to the Ukrainians in the next 2 to 24 months. So some of it arriving soon, some of it taking a little bit longer. And officials also said not to rule out another immediate package to be coming in the short term as well.
Carla, one other thing, you know, speaking of defense officials, I was wondering what their assessment is of the mobilization plan that was announced by Russian President Vladimir Putin, because we have seen the exodus of individuals leaving Russia, the protests there, the reports coming in of perhaps people not having proper training and equipment. But what is the U.S. assessment of the mobilization effort?
Well, the U.S. is looking at it just as you and I are looking at it. The officials that I've been speaking with point out to the tens of thousands of Russian men that have fled. I mean, just pick a bordering country to Russia and you can hear about the Russian men fleeing this mobilization. A senior military official did tell reporters that they have seen a small number of the first reservists from this mobilization move into Ukraine. But if you do the math, that's not a lot of time to prepare them and to train them. And so Russian officials may be continuing to send these troops, but U.S. officials are cautioning it's unclear at this point how effective they're going to be considering their lack of training and preparation for this fight.
Carla Babb is VOA's Pentagon correspondent. Carla, thank you.
You're welcome.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said on Thursday that a deliberate attack against allies' infrastructure will be met with a determined response. This follows what NATO is calling acts of sabotage on the Nord Stream pipelines. Speaking on the phone to reporters, Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov said that incidents on two major undersea gas pipelines from Russia to Germany look like acts of state-sponsored terrorism. European gas expert Terry Bros told Reuters News that the leaks should lead the EU to rethink the resiliency of its critical infrastructure.
If Russia has done this, then Russia has killed, as I told you, Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2, and so it has killed its option to, at some stage, flood the EU market. So this is why it points to Russia, but there are, I mean, it's Russia is not the winner on all, it doesn't tick all the boxes. The box that Russia does tick is, if it's Russia, and again it's an if it's Russia, then we in Europe have been again very naive. We've been very naive when Russia didn't refill, when Gazprom didn't refill its European storage. We should have looked at those pipes much, much, much more closely.
For even more updates on the war, 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com/flashpoint. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. Russia has received another financial blow, with the last Turkish banks ending their support of the Russian Mir payment system. This is as the West steps up its efforts to isolate Moscow over its invasion of Ukraine. Until now, Turkey has resisted Western pressure to enforce Western sanctions. Dorian Jones has the details.
The decision of three Turkish state banks to pull out of the Russian Mir payment system follows two private Turkish banks suspending Mir transactions earlier this month. Moscow uses Mir to circumvent Russian exclusion from international credit cards as part of Western sanctions over its Ukrainian invasion. Maria Shangina is a specialist on international sanctions at the Institute for Strategic Studies. She says Washington is stepping up its efforts to tighten sanctions against Russia.
For the West, it's important that the enforcement of the existing sanctions is as watertight as possible. So any tolerance vis-a-vis those countries that help to bust sanctions, this is where the West can, you know, change its policy towards Ankara and consider imposing a sanctions threat.
The Kremlin Wednesday condemned Washington, accusing it of putting unprecedented pressure on Turkish banks to withdraw from Mir. The US Treasury last week warned Turkish banks working with the Mir payment system risks supporting Russian efforts to evade US sanctions. Evading U.S. sanctions could potentially open Turkish banks to secondary sanctions, which include being banned from U.S. dollars. Attila Yeşilada of Global Source Partners says even the threat of such sanctions could have severe consequences for Turkish banks, which depend on borrowing dollars from international lenders.
Turkish banks have a very heavy schedule ahead in the next months, rolling over probably something like $40 billion. And I think the reputational damage there could be tremendous. I'm not accusing any Turkish bank of being a party to sanctions violation, but I think the general attitude of any compliance officer would be just don't do business with them. It's dangerous. We don't want to get into trouble.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who has close ties with Russian President Vladimir Putin, has refused to enforce sanctions against Russia. Erdogan argues such measures are counterproductive and would hinder his efforts to play an honest broker between the Russian and Ukrainian leaders, with whom he also has good relations. Turkish-Russian trade has boomed since the start of the Ukrainian conflict. Timothy Ash is a senior strategist with Blue Bay Asset Management. He says with presidential elections next year and a crisis-ridden economy, Erdogan sees Russian trade as key to his political survival.
Turkey is increasingly dependent on Russia for capital flows, money that they potentially can use to intervene to defend the currency. I mean, this is essentially why Erdogan is so interested in this relationship with Russia. He wants to win an election. He's short of cash. The pressure point is inflation. The weakness is the exchange rate because of the balance of payments problem, and he needs to defend it. And obviously, foreign exchange reserves are the way to do it.
With Erdogan meeting with Putin in September, the third encounter in as many months, and bilateral trade a crucial part of the talks, few analysts predict Turkey's ending of its support of the Mir will be the end of Turkey's deepening Russian trading ties. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
As Russia's invasion of Ukraine stalls amid fierce resistance and counteroffensives, the conflict has also unleashed tensions throughout Russian society. Despite the brutal government crackdown on any form of dissent, voices of protest are emerging nonetheless. The city of St. Petersburg has consistently been a center of opposition to the war, and it is once again at the forefront of citizen unrest. Henry Ridgewell narrates this report by VOA's Moscow Bureau.
For several years, opposition members of St. Petersburg's city assembly have been meeting in this pizzeria because the authorities won't let them into parliament. In recent weeks, this small group of lawmakers has shaken Russian politics by presenting a formal petition for the impeachment of Russian President Vladimir Putin.
We chose to use a new rhetoric. We are liberal MPs, and up to now we were concerned more with social issues. In this petition for Putin's removal, we focus on the fact that he has caused fundamental damage to the Russian Federation, not to another state, but to the citizens of our country.
Their demand to remove Putin from power is based on their belief that the war in Ukraine, what Putin calls a special military operation, is a personal project of the Russian president.
I am convinced that if Vladimir Putin ceases to be president, this special operation in Ukraine will not continue.
These opposition lawmakers have already been fined, and they accept that they could face further criminal charges.
Many people are worried that something might happen to us, but someone has to do something.
The petition has also energized St. Petersburg's civil society into open defiance. In this small bar in St. Petersburg, young poets gather to read their poems critical of Putin's war in Ukraine. They believe the time has come to speak their minds.
The courage of the intellectuals who stand against the war gives people hope, gives people motivation and strength to continue fighting, since you discover that you are not alone.
Most people to this day remain silent. But perhaps that is changing because we see the news, but it will take time.
There is an ever-present fear that these actions, no matter how small, could lead to arrest.
Fear affects anyone. It's a normal reaction. Only idiots and Alexei Navalny are not afraid. I am not Navalny, and I am not an idiot. So yes, I am afraid.
Putin's invasion of Ukraine has not only upended global security, but has plunged Russia into political and social instability. The consequences are difficult to predict. Millions of young Russians, an entire generation, face a deeply uncertain future. For VOA's Moscow Bureau, Henry Ridgewell in London.
The UN Human Rights Office is calling for the release of Russians arrested for protesting President Putin's conscription to bolster Russia's fighting capacity in Ukraine. Lisa Schlein takes it from here.
Nearly 2,400 demonstrators reportedly have been arrested in various locations across Russia following President Vladimir Putin's declaration last Wednesday of a partial mobilization of troops to join the invasion of Ukraine. His call up of 300,000 reservists to strengthen Russia's battle-weary army in Ukraine has triggered mass anti-war protests. UN Human Rights spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani says clashes have erupted between demonstrators and police in some instances, but most protests have been peaceful.
While the majority of the protests are reported to have been peaceful, military and administrative buildings, including enlistment offices, have been attacked in several regions. We stress that arresting people solely for exercising their rights of peaceful assembly and freedom of expression constitutes an arbitrary deprivation of liberty.
She says it is unclear how many people remain in detention. Fear of being called up for service has sent thousands of people fleeing to other countries in hopes of avoiding the draft. Shamdasani says it is heartbreaking to see so many people resorting to such desperate measures in the context of what she calls an unnecessary war.
What international human rights law does insist on is that where people wish to object to participation in hostilities, so where they wish to declare a conscientious objection, this needs to be taken into account. This needs to be respected by the authorities.
She says information needs to be provided to people who are hesitant about going to war so they know how to raise a conscientious objection to participation. Shamdasani notes there has been an acknowledgement on the part of Russian authorities that in some cases people have been asked to mobilize by mistake. She says she believes a hotline has been set up to deal with those cases. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that'll wrap things up for us today. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.